Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we pull apart complex topics so you don't have to. Today, we're diving into a really crucial case for contract law, especially under the UCC. It's Olesen v. Coomer.
Oh, yeah, this one's a classic. A 1973 Illinois case that really sets the stage for understanding anticipatory repudiation and, importantly, the duty to mitigate damages. You know, how the law tries to keep things efficient.
Okay, so let's paint a picture. We've got a grain dealer, Olesen. He's a merchant under the UCC, that's key. And he makes a deal with Coomer, who's a farmer.
Right.
The deal is for 40,000 bushels of corn, price set at $1.12 a bushel. Delivery's supposed to happen later in the year, October and December 1970. Seems straightforward enough.
Yep, pretty standard stuff. But then things take a turn. On June 3rd, Coomer gets in touch with Olesen.
And what does he say?
He basically says, look, it's rained so much, I haven't even been able to plant. I'm not going to be able to deliver that corn. So he's repudiating the contract early.
Okay, repudiating. And this is where it gets interesting legally, right? Because on that same day, June 3rd, the forward price for corn isn't $1.12 anymore. It's already crept up to $1.16 a bushel.
Exactly. And then, fast forward to the original delivery times, the spot prices. They've shot way up. We're talking $1.35 in October and then $1.49 by December. Big jumps.
Wow. Okay, so you can immediately see the problem for Olesen. He's thinking, my loss is based on these December prices, right? It's a huge difference.
That's the core question, isn't it? When a deal falls apart before performance is due, who eats the cost of those rising market prices? Why couldn't Olesen just, you know, wait until October or December, see what the price actually was then, and calculate his damages based on that? Seems kind of logical.
It does, yeah. Because that's when he'd actually feel the pinch, trying to buy replacement corn.
Yeah.
But, the court didn't quite see it that way. So for this deep dive, we're using the actual court opinion and a summary breaking down the UCC stuff.
Right. And by the end, hopefully everyone listening will get a handle on this idea of a commercially reasonable time to mitigate, what good faith means in business, and why the timing of the breach is so critical under the Uniform Commercial Code. Super important stuff, especially for law students.
Definitely. Okay, so let's nail down the contract details again. 40,000 bushels, $1.12 to delivery in October, December. Solid.
Yep. Then June 3rd comes the repudiation persons. Coomer says no go because of the rain. And crucially, the market's already moved to $1.16 for forward contracts.
And those later price spikes were $1.35 to $1.49. That's a serious increase.
Yeah.
You can totally see why Olesen would argue his damages should reflect those numbers. That's his real loss, arguably.
Understandable position for sure. Which leads us right to the main legal fight. Do we calculate damages based on the June 3rd price of $1.16 when Olesen found out Coomer was backing out? Or do we use the much higher October-December prices?
And this brings in the UCC, specifically Section 2, Title 713, right? What does that say?
Uh-huh. 2713 is key. It generally states that damages for the seller's non-delivery or repudiation are the difference between the contract price and the market price. Well, when the buyer learned of the breach.
Okay, wait. Let's pause there. Learned of the breach. Olesen learned on June 3rd, the forward price then was $1.16. So the statute seems to point pretty clearly to using the June 3rd price, doesn't it?
On its face, yes. It seems quite direct.
So why the argument? Why couldn't Olesen say, yeah, I learned then, but my actual damage, the money I'm out, didn't happen until I needed the corn later at those higher prices?
And that's where another big UCC concept comes crashing in, mitigation of damages. Section 2712 talks about the buyer's right and often duty to cover.
Cover. Okay, what does that mean in plain English?
Basically, when the seller breaches, the buyer should reasonably try to buy substitute goods elsewhere. It's about not letting the damages pile up unnecessarily. The law wants you to be proactive, you know, stop the bleeding.
Got it. So you need to try and find replacement goods reasonably quickly. And the court in Olesen thought he could have covered back in June.
Exactly. They specifically pointed out that the grain market was, and I quote, well-organized and easily accessible. Meaning, Olesen, the grain dealer, could have pretty easily gone out on June 3rd and made a new forward contract to buy that same amount of corn at the $1.16 price.
Okay, so because he could have locked in that $1.16 price then by making a substitute contract,
mm-hmm.
The court said waiting until October or December, when prices were way higher, was unreasonable.
Precisely. The court's thinking was, it's not commercially reasonable to just sit back and wait, hoping the original seller might somehow perform, especially when you have a clear way to secure substitute goods right then and there. You can't just watch the market soar and expect the breaching party to pay for the peak price later.
That actually makes a lot of sense. It's like the law is saying, hey, you had a chance to limit the damage here. You should have taken it. Avoids economic waste, I guess.
Exactly right. And this ties into another really important part of the case. Good faith and commercial reasonableness. That's UCC section 2103(1)(b).
Okay, and that section makes a distinction, doesn't it, between merchants and non-merchants. Olison, the dealer, he's a merchant, but Coomer, the farmer.
The court said Coomer was not a merchant in this transaction. His main gig wasn't regularly selling grain in that organized market sense. And that distinction matters big time.
Why does it matter so much here?
Because for merchants, good faith isn't just honesty. It also means following reasonable commercial standards of fair dealing in the trade. And this is where that whole issue of the trade custom Olison mentioned comes in.
Right. Olison tried to argue there was this custom in the grain business where you can just cancel a contract if you paid the difference between the contract price and the current market price.
Yes, but here's the kicker. He never told Coomer about this supposed custom, and since Coomer wasn't a merchant, he couldn't be expected to just know about these specific industry practices.
So the fact that Olofsson didn't mention this custom actually worked against him. The court saw that as maybe not acting in complete good faith, especially towards a non-merchant.
Exactly. Good faith requires a certain level of transparency, particularly when dealing with someone who isn't, you know, playing on the same field in terms of market knowledge and trade practices. His silence on that point didn't help his argument for the later, higher damages.
Okay, so putting it all together, the ability to cover in June, the duty to mitigate, the good faith issue with the undisclosed custom, it all points away from using those October-December prices. Why did the court ultimately reject them? What was the core reason?
The big reason was to prevent Olofsson from potentially speculating. The court didn't want buyers, after a clear repudiation and with cover available, to just sit back and gamble on the market going up, knowing the seller would foot the bill.
Right, that stop the bleeding idea again. You can't just wait and see if you can maximize the damages.
Exactly. The court felt it was unreasonable for Olofsson to wait, possibly benefit from a price surge, while Coomer carries the full risk of that increase, even though Olofsson had a way out back in June. The court basically said Coomer shouldn't become Olofsson's unwitting insurance policy against rising prices after the repudiation.
Makes sense. So what was the final ruling? How much did Olofsson actually get?
The appellate court agreed with the trial court. Damages were based on that June 3rd forward price of $1.16. So the difference was $0.04 per bushel, $1.16 minus the $1.12 contract price. Multiply that by 40,000 bushels.
And you get $1,600. Wait, let me recheck the outline. $1,500. Yeah. Slight calculation error there.
Okay.
$1,500.
Right. $1,500. Significantly less than what he would have claimed based on the December price.
Okay, so let's boil this down. Key takeaways for our listeners, especially the law students tuning in.
Three main things, I think. First, if there's an anticipatory repudiation and you can reasonably buy substitute goods, cover, you need to act reasonably promptly to mitigate your damages. Don't sit on your hands if there's an accessible market.
Okay, lesson one. Mitigate promptly if you can cover. What's next?
Second, be transparent about trade customs, especially if you're a merchant dealing with a non-merchant. Good faith means fair dealing, and that includes not hiding relevant industry practices.
Right. Disclose those customs. And the third takeaway.
Third, for anticipatory repudiation where cover is possible, damages are generally measured at the time the buyer learns of the breach, using the market price then, not the future performance date. The goal is compensation, not speculation.
Makes sense. Let's play devil's advocate for a second. What if Coomer had been considered a merchant? You know, maybe he was a huge farming operation, constantly dealing in the grain markets. Would that trade custom argument have held more water?
Ooh, good question. Yeah, if Coomer was a merchant, presumed to know the ins and outs of the grain trade, then Olofsson's argument about the cancellation custom would be much stronger. The court might have seen Olofsson's failure to explicitly mention it differently. It might not have been seen as a lack of good faith if both parties were expected to know the trade rules. It really highlights how that merchant-non-merchant distinction can change everything.
Interesting. So, wrapping up, the core principle from Olofsson v. Coomer is really about acting reasonably and promptly when a deal goes bad early, especially if you can fix the problem by going back into the market.
Exactly. The UCC pushes for mitigation, for stopping losses early and not waiting around and letting them escalate, you know, potentially at the other party's expense.
And for everyone studying this stuff, think about how this plays out elsewhere. What if there isn't a good substitute market? How does that change the duty to mitigate? And what about those ethical layers around trade customs? Lots to chew on.
Definitely. Olufsen is a great starting point. Dig into those UCC sections 2712, 2713, and see how other courts have applied these ideas. It's foundational stuff for commercial law.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for diving deep with us on this one. Really helps clarify those UCC principles.